Welcome back to episode number 511 of the Wentz KU Podcast. I want to thank all of our supporters, the contributors, fellows producers, and legacy partners for all your help. We can't do it without you. I want to invite you to check out the WCYpodcast.com to see how you can help support this program and help us reach another 3 million potential brothers or current members of our fraternity or our folks just interested in Freemasonry. Now this week, we have not one, but two special guests, Brother Ian and Brother Dago of the Southern California Research Lodge's Fraternal Review, to talk about the latest issue of their magazine and some really cool surprises at the end of the interview. But before we get to that, I want to thank Scouters Lodge in Maryland for a great time, some great fellowship, and some great conversation. Now, here is the magazine, and here's that interview. I hope you enjoy. All right, everybody. Welcome back to this special episode of the Wentz KU Podcast. We're here this evening with two special guests, not one, but two. We've got Brother Ian and Brother Dago from the Southern California Research Lodge in this special, amazing, super cool episode. Why did I have these guys on? Well, we'll get to that in just a minute. But first, I want to head on over to Brother Dago Rodriguez. And so thanks for coming on. Thanks for making some time to talk to us this evening. And welcome to the program.
Thank you, brother. Happy to be here.
And over to Brother Ian.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a pleasure. Really excited.
So the reason we have to have you guys on is because you guys did something pretty fantastic. Now, the Southern California Research Lodge has done some really amazing things since I've been in Freemasonry. It's not, you know, when most research lodges at the end of the year, they put out their transactions of their publication, and it's like 20 pages stapled, and it's, you know, something cool, whatever, like this. And that's great. But you guys have taken it to the next level, and we'll talk a little bit about that too. But first of all, what we're talking about is this particular issue. If y'all can see it, if we release video for this, this is the Southern California Research Lodge Fraternal Review, the latest issue, which is all about the top 10 Masonic books of the millennium so far. So first and foremost, what prompted you guys to all do something this ambitious as a best books so far? You guys have done best books in the past, and those have drawn a lot of people to vote for those books and things, but what got you thinking, like, why a best book so far?
Ian?
Awesome question. Great place to start, right? Why did we do this? Well, as you pointed out, it's been some time since we did our last issue on top books. I think it was 2016 when we did the top 10 Masonic books, the top 10 esoteric authors. And I personally felt that, you know, Masons and non-Masons look to Fraternal Review really for guidance and direction. So we've all seen these standardized lists, right? We're talking about the Mackeys, the Pikes, the Manly P. Halls, and in a way, it's a bit of a tired list. So we wanted something new. We wanted something accessible for the younger generations of Masons, and we wanted to do it in a way that, you know, without compromise or equivocation, that it was truly worth its salt when it came to Masonic education. We felt like we needed something fresh and something that the new up-and-coming Masons could really take as guidance and direction on continued education.
Yeah, and also to piggyback on that, I think that we've also been asked several times, like, what are the books that are more new, more modern, coming out of Masonry that you recommend that we can read? And that also helped inspire this list. And according to Brother Gerald Smith, the former master of the Research Lodge, who was instrumental in editing this issue of the top 10 Masonic books of the new millennium, writes in his foreword, it was also during the pandemic that more Masons were at home reading and paying more attention to the literature that they were collecting in Masonry. And we really wanted to get an idea of what were the new things that they were reading, what were the new things that they were buying on Amazon or wherever that caught their interest in the craft. And that was something else that helped inspire this issue.
I love both of your points there, specifically to call out to two things. Brother Ian, you had mentioned that some of these book lists are really tired. And,
yes,
you know, as much as we love them, they are quite tired. And if we're completely honest, a lot of the information that has propagated through Freemasonry in the last, I don't even, you could say 100 years, really, is yep. one or two authors who have been cited and republished and cited and republished. For instance, you know, anybody who's got several sets of Masonic history books, only to find out that the single source is Albert Mackey.
Yeah.
And on top of that, a lot of the information that is presented in those texts is not always as up to date as it needs to be. And what I mean is, you're looking at historical facts that are explored 100 years ago, maybe more, and now compared with more modern discoveries, more older discoveries, and just exposés and all kinds of things that we're writing about now that actually have a better and easier, I would say, like, flow of information to come out of them. Like, the language is completely different almost in some of the way things are written, too. So it makes it that much more accessible for the modern-day reader. And then to Brother Dago, your point that so many brothers now are picking up books. And you used a word that I wanted to harp on here for just a moment, and that is collecting. Like, I've got all these books. I have not read all of these books. I have read something from every one of these books, but I've not read them all the way through. But I'm also a collector of books, too. So along my Masonic text, which is pretty much this center and all of that. But the other side is things like, you know, first editions of Ripley's Believe It or Not. I collect books, too, you know. And we do a lot of collecting with books in Freemasonry. I see a lot of guys post images of the books that they've received. And they're always, you know, the cover's not even creased yet. And what I would love to see more of is brothers posting their highlights. I would love to see brothers, you know, writing in the margins of their books. And they're like, oh, my God, why would you write in the margin? Because it's your book. You know, make it your own, but really taking the time to look into those books and read those books and make them a part of your Masonic journey and not just collecting dust on the shelf or, you know, grabbing 10, you know, hearts on Instagram or something. So yeah. Definitely critical thing there. Brothers are definitely picking up books and reading them more often.
Yeah, and on that note, a lot of these, like, old collector items, if you will, these older texts and manuscripts, you don't want to write in the margins because it costs you an arm and a leg to collect them and put them on your shelf. And so they become these ornaments of our craft. And in some way, we feel like they, you know, they embody our stature or, you know, our literary accomplishments that we've attained. But we are not really interacting with the text. We're not really using them as tools of our craft the way that we should. So in a way, a lot of these, you know, newer texts of the new millennium, they don't cost a fortune. Most of them, if not all, correct me if I'm wrong, are paperback, right? So you can maybe feel a little bit more inclined to scribble in them, draw on them, add the reflection. And I would add to your point, too, not just post those highlights, but post your reflections on those highlights. Share with others what you're truly gaining from that experience of absorbing the text, absorbing the language and the education, and share it with others, because I think that's also part of that learning experience that we all need to feel.
I had an English teacher that would tell us, if you find a book that's highlighted and marked on the edges, don't dismiss it. Actually take it, because it actually increases the value of the book. And a lot of us were like, what? But it's all used up. But I mean, it's to this point, right? That it's what you're learning that you're highlighting and writing on the sides. And that is what the value that you're getting out of this book.
The true value. Yeah.
It's a great idea and a great way to approach it. But I think this is also how the Fraternal Review has always laid itself out, where it's fragments of highlights of books and articles that are published within the Fraternal Review to entice you. And if you want to further explore it, this is why we have the annotations at the bottom for you to go purchase that book, go on that website and read further and explore it more if you are really intrigued by it.
And I think you guys have done a great job over the years of doing that. I mean, the way you guys present materials and say, it's almost like here's a taste. If you like this, you can make it at home, you know, and I really appreciate the way you guys have done that.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so along the way,
it comes with a critique too. If I could just jump in here again, absolutely. I think this was part of the thesis statement of this issue, is that, you know, we don't want to just make clickbait for people. Oh, it's the latest list. You know, this is Fraternal Review trying to like add some sizzle or some sensation to bring readers in, or, you know, in some way like capture their attention without really delivering valuable Masonic education. I think Fraternal Review at times, because of some of the progressive topics we take on, has received that critique. And so coming out with the top 10 list, we wanted to make sure that it really held up to other Masonic scholars and, you know, ensure that these authors felt that they were a part of a reputable list.
Yeah, and I think you guys, again, have done a fantastic job with that. And speaking of the content that comes into this, I mean, obviously there's a lot that goes into doing this, from planning and all of these kinds of things. But as you guys started to put this all together, did you guys have any surprises along the way, things that you guys really were taken aback by, whether that was choices of books or books that really started to stand out as you guys were counting the results, or any surprises along the way, anything like that?
To me, the biggest surprise was Jamie Paul Lamb having two books on the top 7 of this list. You know, he's a fairly new scholar in the game, and he's already getting this great reputation of readership that is unheard of this quick in the game, right? And I think, in the context of piggybacking what Ian was saying, you know, we are proud of this list because it starts to set, I don't want to say a standard, but a line of, well, will these be the authors that we're talking about in 50 years, in 75 years? Are they going to withstand the test of time? Because that's what, you know, how it truly will define it. And I don't see any of those top 10 not really withstanding that. I think they all are contributing something unique and important to the fraternity that will be looked at from time immemorial in understanding where we were at this present time and the thought process that we had in the craft. Whether we agree with it or not, that's a great thing about a list. We can hate or love some of these books, but this is what the consensus has been at this present time that we're living in. So I think it's cool and fascinating on that, you know, archaeological sort of way of looking at where we're at with the craft right now.
I mean, we might be saying that we're standing on the precipice of these great icebergs, right? These great monoliths of up-and-coming Masonic scholars and authors. And I personally feel that way about a handful of people on this list, but Jamie Paul Lamb in particular, the fact that these two books he's written and published in the last 4 years that land atop the list, you know, top 10, I think 7, position 7 and position 2, it's just an incredible feat. That was one of the biggest surprises for me as well. And just to quote Brother Jerriel Smith here, he says, quote, you know, writing these two books published again in just the past 4 years, the fact that he's in top 10, 7 and 2 of the New Millennium Book Poll establishes him as a rising star of American Masonic authors. So I do think that this in some way is foreshadowing, you know, what's to come out of these great minds and these brilliant scholars.
You have to look at it in the way in that they write and also what they're writing about. And what I find fascinating is that in years, you know, gone by, our most prolific Masonic authors aren't guys like Mackey. Those guys are seen as administrative definitions and general, you know, ideas about what concepts of Masonry are. On the other hand, there are very few reputable, okay, and I'll use that term, and I mean it, reputable Masonic authors writing about things of any kind of a spiritual nature or even supernatural or occult or deeper meanings in Freemasonry, even just philosophical.
Yep.
Very few that withstand the test of time. You've got people like, you know, Eliphas Levi, who, if we're being honest, you know, I mean, cool book, great esoteric concepts, but how much of it is grounded in reality, in fact, or whatever. You've got like a handful of authors like that. And then here comes people riding on the precipice, which is people like, you know, J.D. Buck or Krieger or Steinmetz. And then you start getting into guys like Plumer and guys like, Pottinger, for instance. And maybe just before those guys, still riding those lines, are people like Manly P. Hall. And what's so wild to me is people loved those books, and we're always having to go back to those books to get what we want. Mm-hmm. And here you've got a handful of books on this list that are very spiritual, very philosophical in nature, that explore these concepts both in that sense, and of course JPL also does that, you know, with his books, both Myth, Magic, Masonry, and Approaching the Middle Chamber, in a not just a philosophical kind of magic way, but he's explaining why it's seen in those ways, almost in a scientific way, which is really refreshing. And so those people now who are going to the past to get what they want now have a contemporary source for a lot of the same materials. And it's probably really refreshing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, in some ways, it might be just a sign of the times, too. Brother Michael Jarzabek, who's guest edited for Fraternal Review now for a handful of times, you know, he discusses this idea of where were all the good Masons, right? Good Masons in dark times. So coming out of COVID, coming out of lockdown, doing some of that deeper introspection, that interpersonal reflection, and some of those spiritual or philosophical pursuits, maybe this list in some ways is a reflection of what we have all been feeling over the last couple of years. So only time will tell, but to your point, brother, I think that maybe there's some of that at play as well.
Yeah, I agree with you in there that it's like a very somewhat post-pandemic analysis of where we are, the state of mind that we are in, right? I think what COVID, if there's anything it's taught us, it's that really to reflect on what's important in our lives and what matters. And a lot of Masonry is the important meat and potatoes of it is that introspection, you know, the understanding of the self, knowing thyself, and a majority, if not all of these books, tap on that idea. And I think this is why they landed on this list.
Yeah, that's right. One other little surprise that came out of this, and this is a bit of a backstory just on like the operations of how we put this together. But when we first administered the poll, this went out essentially to every subscriber of Fraternal Review, plus our own peers, our own networks. And from those initial ballots and that initial polling, we came up with this first list. once the top 25 list was locked, all the votes were counted, and I know we're going to get to that question about were there any recounts. We then sent out an announcement to all of those authors, and we asked them, those Masons and people who had made the list, re-rank these based on your own ranking. So now you had, like, basically the authors from the list then doing their own peer review, and Observing the Craft actually was twice selected, both by the general audience, if you will, and then again by his peers. And to me, that was very surprising. I actually expected that there was going to be some, like, discrepancy between what the authors deemed as number one and what the general public deemed as number one. And, you know, how are we going to reconcile that? Now, hey, brother, here's the number one choice. You should read this. But just so you know, the authors actually think this other one is better. Luckily, we didn't have to reconcile that. And to me, that was not only a delight, but a surprise.
And that's that on page 5 of the magazine.
That's crazy to me. But it does. It does speak absolutely to the, I would say more to a snapshot in time of the attitudes of the brothers present today and what they're looking for and what they want Masonry to be. And if that is it, right? Like, hey, I want you to read something about what Freemasonry should be. Well, it's not this book or that book. It's Observing the Craft, right? This is what overwhelmingly brothers are looking and want. And what's interesting there is, you know, what if Grand Lodges are listening? Maybe they could read that book and take some hints at perhaps what our craft could potentially offer if we took things maybe a little bit more serious.
Yeah, I agree. Now, I think that book gets misinterpreted, I think, a lot. And I think the fundamental thing with Observing the Craft is pay more attention to the details of your lodge, whether it's picking up the trash on the floor or giving a great impression in your ritual. Really pay attention to the details, because the love is in the details, and that's what people are going to remember. The brothers are going to remember, and they'll keep that love going in your lodge. And if they broke it down to that bone marrow and stopped looking at the superfluous parts of what he writes about, I think they would definitely jump on board and agree with what the text says.
Yep. Now, let me ask this, because I want to ask you guys, can we just pitch a TV show here? Let's pitch Kitchen Nightmares. So with Andrew Hammer going to a lodge. Can we do that? Can we make it? He would have, like, and he could just swear and call people, like, a donut. And be like, you donut.
Rebuild the lodge. Yeah, that would be an awesome study.
All right, that may work, but it may also drive the production crew a little batty with all the editing he may require, may or may not require.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, how long did it take to organize this? Because the way you guys really talked about it, it sounds like this thing was in the making. You had mentioned in the green room when we were talking before that you had been conversing with the authors. I don't want to give anything away yet, because we got a big thing to announce here at the end of this interview. But you were working with some authors, some things were sent, and you had been collecting things like quite a while ago because you knew that this was happening. And so how long does it take to organize an issue like this with, you know, polling results and then polling authors and, you know, all the soliciting the responses, which has to be just a nightmare, you know, logistically, if you're not organized, collecting, counting, designing the magazine. I mean, the layout alone, how long does this take?
Brother Dago, you want to take that one? I have an answer.
We actually had the seed of this idea back in 2019, but we had so many awesome themes that year that we decided to push it to give us more time to put it together, and voted to put it in 2020. In August, we decided to set it to release it in September of 2021, which traditionally that's when all our last two polls have been released, in September for some odd reason, but that is how it was slated. And then through the end of 2020, we were just sort of arranging and getting the infrastructure set on how we were going to tackle it. before unleashing it in, I think the first ballots went out in February of this year, because we didn't want to give everybody too much time, because they would just set it aside and not really submit anything. But we did paper ballots, and then Ian set up the website to be able to just log it all in through the computer, through the website, and collect the data that way. And then around, I think the deadline was June 1st, I think, or May 1st. One of those two, it was a closing deadline, and then Jerry painstakingly sat there for 2 weeks, putting it all together, counting it. And I think Brother Doug showed up and checked and balanced that. And then I think John Salido showed up and checked and balanced that. And then they came up with the top 25 books from there. And then we had to, then right away, the idea for the thing that we're going to talk about at the end was already in the, you know, it was already imagined, right? You have these phantasmical ideas, at least that's how I think, you know, let's go 110%. And if we hit 90% or 80%, at least we got that close. So it wasn't really even sure it was going to happen until I communicated with the top 10 authors. I said, congratulations. We won't tell you what number you fell in, but you're on the top 10, and we'd like to send you a list of the top 25 that you can then vote on yourselves, because we want to create a different list with the author's picks list, and also answer a few questions on your behind-the-scenes process on the creation of your book, and can you mail us off 25 copies of your book that we'll buy if you can, and if you can sign them, that'd be great. And that's, and then from the beginning of June all the way up until August 1st.
Wow.
All the books came together. And then just finding, like, the box alone was like a big discussion. Oh,
I bet. Yeah. Like when I think about, putting together little craft projects, and again, you all might be going, what? I hear some clues here going on to what maybe have happened. But I mean, I know you, Dago. I know, Ian, you know, you guys are perfectionists. Everything has to be perfect. I mean, when the first time I had talked to Dago, when you and I started talking about, you know, would I buy, I think you said, would you buy a leather-bound edition of Southern California Research Lodge's publication, like, on a yearly basis? I'm like, I would buy a leather-bound edition, like, in a nice, like, box, and it comes to me, and I get to open it and unwrap it, you know, like, I'd pay.
A leather-bound Harry Potter-style book?
Yeah, course, right? I'll give you $150 for that. Easy, all day long. You know, that is the coolest thing.
That doesn't surprise me as one of Dago's ideas, crazy ideas. And, you know, his vision is really what drives a lot of us. I think it should be said that the amount of time we put into this is a direct reflection of the respect that we wanted to give to these authors and the respect that we have about Fraternal Review and its mission and the education and the light that we provide. It's a huge honor to pull something like this off. Yes, it's an incredible feat, but it's also a huge honor that these authors, these scholars would want to participate and be honored by our work. So going back here to Brother Andrew Hammer for a second, this is a way that we observe the craft. This is the way that we focus on those details and we give it the attention that it deserves so that it does elevate it, so that we can pull something like this off. You know, if we were to just throw this together in a few months, and maybe we could have, there's no way that these authors would feel the way that they do, you know, being recognized on a list like this. And I just, for me, it's a way to pay respect and a way for us to observe the craft.
Absolutely agree. I think you guys did a tremendous job. Looking at putting this thing together over these weeks, months, and kind of like years, right, since you started thinking about it so early on, what was your favorite part of putting together this particular issue? Design, having to, getting to bend the ears of the authors. I mean, what sticks out to you both in particular?
My answer is really straight ahead. So I'm one of the newest members of the Southern California Research Lodge, and I look up to these guys, right? The reason I joined the Southern California Research Lodge and became involved in helping produce and publish Fraternal Review is because I wanted to be like them. So for me, the biggest reward was really just going through the process and being part of that editorial process and seeing a project from beginning, middle, and end. And, secretly, I'll just share now, I thought this was going to be the easiest thing to contribute to because it was process-oriented, right? It's like, oh, I set up a poll, the votes come in, I do a book review. I've done book reviews before. Like, I can do this. So this was a vehicle for me to actually access my own research and my own contribution to a lodge that really I aspired to be a member of, and a group of men who are doing incredible work. So that was the best part. And then to also be able to sit down with Brother Hammer and have a conversation and do that interview about his book and to learn, what has gone into his way of thinking and his research and process approaching the book that he's published, to sit down with JPL and talk through approaching the middle chamber. It's been a wild ride, and it's been just a joy to learn and be a part of the process for the first time since joining this lodge.
That's awesome. And that's what it should do, right? That's what a research lodge should do is, inspire its members to contribute, and grow at the same time. To me, there's not one thing, just the process of putting this together. I'm like the behind the scenes kind of guy. I like that more. And just seeing an idea realized and come to life, whether it be the magazine or the thing we're going to talk about at the end, it's just that idea that goes back to that second degree of masonry of the power to create and being able to inspire others with what you create. And I think that is what I love about this process, because I know the strengths and the flaws of this issue, and nobody can damn it or love it as much as I can. So that's why once it's out, no matter what they say, it doesn't really change my opinion of it. It's just what they'll never take away is the process that went into, the behind the scenes that went into putting it together. And that's what I enjoy the most out of this whole machine that we have here at the Fraternal Review. But it is work, and it's time consuming work. And if we can inspire at least one Mason to open up a book that they would have never thought of opening up, I think we've done our job.
I have to agree. I've seen, I watched you give a speech at the end of South Pasadena Masonic Lodge's MasonicCon, and you could see just how much pride you had in watching the event come together the way you did. You are very much behind the scenes, but make no mistake, you are a driving force. I would say nationwide, if not worldwide, to people who know you and really know the works that you put together. I mean, really, Fraternal Review was the first time I ever opened a Masonic magazine outside of something like Living Stones or The Working Tools, that, like, those magazines were cool, but you guys had the edge. You had the pop culture edge. You had the stuff that was, like, relevant right now. And it wasn't it was, like, succinct. It was, it just had something magical, and I think that's what a lot of people are really looking for today. And you're doing it, and it's awesome, and it's really inspiring to see what you guys put together.
For sure, but it's a team effort, right? It's like Brother Daryl was, seminal in championing this issue and working his tail off. to make sure this issue came together. And if he had it his way, you'd probably see 10 more pages in this
manual.
There was just so much information and data that he was collecting. He's like, we could show this, we could do these graphs, this data, like so much cool information and telling information that we can put in the issue. And I'm like, well, it's just too much.
Well, the thing is,
I love for it is what I love about it. You know,
for the listeners, I totally agree. And for the listeners, you guys should know that if you subscribe to this magazine, it's typically 19 pages.
16.
Yeah. And this time around, it's 24 pages. So they put in extra time and effort, extra money, extra investment all around the board to bring
no ads.
No ads. Yeah.
It really is. Funny you have to say that in today's day and age.
You absolutely do.
It's ad free.
It's a subscriber co-op magazine in a way, right? It's like they are the ones that keep it alive and flowing. And it's a testament to our subscribers that we get to push the boundaries as far as we can, if you will, and enjoy the process of putting these together with ideas that a lot of Masons are probably thinking about, but not really exploring in their lodges or seeing in other publications or in books. So we're here to highlight that and complement their Masonic journey and not change it. We're here to complement.
What did you guys have in terms? So when you put together a poll or a voting process, the whole country's like up in arms over voting, right? Like I'm sure you guys had recounts in Texas and hanging chads and all. No, I'm just kidding, right? But what from a voting perspective, like you did paper ballots, you said you had a web ballot. How did you bring that all together to, you know, ensure that you got the right stuff, you got the right votes? Was it a complicated process? I know you said you had Brother Jerry L. Smith working on it for a couple weeks and.
Yeah, I mean, we accounted for it by using a unique identifier that happened to be an email, first, last name, so full name plus email. If someone truly wanted to game the system, they probably could have, you know, made a motion in Lodge and said, okay, everybody vote for my book. But that would have been obvious, right, because you would have had the same votes or the same book showing up multiple times from one district or one lodge. So, yeah, we went through, and again, Brother Jeriel, he was instrumental in this process, really ensuring the accuracy, making sure that there wasn't any fraud and there wasn't any reason for recalls. Although now that you mention it, I mean, Brother Dunning, his book did make the list, so maybe we should, and he's from Texas, so maybe we should do a recall. It's probably too late now. But no, I think because of the unique identifier and the fact that it was so clear based on how different the votes were when they were coming in, it was clear that it was authentic.
That's good to hear, because I know people are going to ask about it, right? Let me ask
there were many, you know, what's surprising was that there were some ballots that, you know, you could list the top 10 in the order that you felt they were important, and there were many that just listed 3 or 5. They couldn't come up with a top 10 list of the new millennium.
That's actually pretty honest, right?
Yeah.
I think that instead of just trying to say, oh, yes, I've read all these books, they're either saying, A, I just can't recommend anything else, or B, I haven't read that many books and I'm not going to BS you here. So that's refreshing, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe that goes back to the question of what we found surprising. Now that you mention that again, Davo, it was surprising actually at first that not many people had a completed list, or the percentage of those who had a completed list of 10 was less than those who had less than 10. So it is honest. And I think, Brother Robert, you point out two reasons there of why.
But which books do you wish made the list that didn't? Like, I know there's the top 10, there's the author's top 10, the author's and scholar's top 10, and then you guys even go on inside, I think it's page 5 that I'm looking at here, that you have the runners-up, right, which is 25 to 11. Were there any, so maybe a better way to ask this is, Were there books you were surprised that didn't make it to the list that were maybe personal favorites of your own?
P.D. Newman, Alchemically Stoned. I was surprised. That is always a book that I hear in Masonic circles mentioned a lot, and it's not on the top 25. And I believe in the esoteric poll, it was on the top 25. But to not see it on this list, I thought was interesting that it wasn't, that it make it on here.
There's a book yet to come out. It's called Whence Came You by Brother Robert Johnson. That didn't make the list. But again, this list is only so far. So
yeah, that'll be
to me, that was a bummer.
Book 100. So with the themes, right, you guys have done these book themes. I think this is the third time you guys have had a list that I can recall. So correct me if I'm wrong, but is there a future for more book-related issues, whether top 10 lists or perhaps centered on a particular book?
Yeah, we were toying around with the idea of maybe just Masonic history books. Right, like that, like kind of breaking them down more into categorized books. But I kind of feel that it's better to let a poll like this rest and live for many years and then revisit it again to revise the list, as opposed to let's do a poll on a different strand and then you just start muddling the original list. I'd like to go back to the 2016 books, 2016 poll on the top 10 books that every Mason should read when we did that poll in 2026, 10 years later, and see now with the esoteric poll we did and the new millennium poll we did, how that would stir the pot on that top 10 list. And maybe 10 years from then, in 2036, if we're still around or our younger brothers that come up, are instilled into this, I would like to see that continue so we can get a breath of how the mentality, right, the sensibility of the craft changed over the decades. So how crazy would it be that in, you know, the year 3000, we have like 10 of these polls, and that year, that at the end of this century, we realize and we have a history of how much Masonry evolved over the decades. I think that's the most important thing we can create out of this without muddling and saying, well, next year let's do another one and another one. A, they're too much work, and B, I think you just saturate it too much where it doesn't have the same potency and credibility as it did before. So I think if I'm still around here, I think this might be the last one until maybe 2026, 2027.
In terms of a list. But again, going back to Brother Mike Jarzebek, he's actually pitched Fraternal Review on a couple topics that do take on literature. And, one book in particular, I'm not going to say which tells more of like an allegorical tale, the hero's journey, and how that relates to the Masonic experience or the journey we go through as we progress through the first, second, and third degree. And we've done this a lot with movies, right, and pop culture. And I think taking on books, you know, iconic books out of the literary history, or maybe even iconic books that are part of the pop culture, like Harry Potter, for example, and then focusing on some of those, taking those as like the object of introspection and reflection, that's possible. And so I know next year there will be at least one issue dedicated to a book or literature in general, but not necessarily a Masonic book as it is here on this.
Fantastic. Yeah. Love the answers here. Let me ask this. Why are we as Masons really so focused on literature? And if I could ask a follow-up to that, perhaps, right, I'm thinking maybe we're so focused on literature because that's really the medium that we have access to, or that we've been really flooded into, or, you know, what we've had access to be able to use to reach the masses. And the second part of that question is, like, can we do top 10 movies or comic books or some other medium? Are there other markets for Fraternal Review to explore?
On the top, you know, it's funny you bring that up because we actually were talking about making a top 10 Masonic, you know, connected themed movies, but we got together with some of the pop culture editors, if you will, and we amongst ourselves try to create a top 10 list first. Like, what would we put on there? And it was hard. It wasn't that easy because then you start, you know, is it going to be a poll on the top 10 movies that are about Masonry, which are not that many, or is it a top 10 poll on movies that connect to Masonry, and then you have an avalanche of a few of these back here. So that's where that one's an interesting one that we keep talking about every year but haven't cracked, and I think it might happen, but not sure when exactly on that pop culture end. And I think we, to your first part of the question, you know, literature, I think as opposed to what? I think everything, you know, in Masonry right now is, you know, about the text and the written word. And there's that debate, right? On Masonic scholars that I just read recently in the social threads about, well, maybe we should have a committee that reads all these Masonic books that are coming out and puts a seal of approval that this is something that is not just well researched, but it's validated as a true and Masonic book and not just something that somebody wrote at midnight one night for 2 days and they've got it published and now everybody's going to read it and this is the new holy grail of Masonry, right? So I think it is an interesting place we're in now. Because before it was difficult to find Masonic literature, and now it feels like there's a lot of different themes out there in Masonic literature that could fill anybody's taste buds. But what is important and what really connects with the craft is the question I ask myself. But then again, it's everybody's individual experience, really. It's what they're wanting. That's what they're connecting to. That's what they're going to read. And the more authors that we have out there with various points of views only goes to show up. It shows us that Masonry, the philosophy of it, is far reaching and it encompasses a lot of different things and it connects to different things if you really analyze it and stop and contemplate it. And I think that's a beautiful thing. Why should we criticize and object, you know, cut that out. We shouldn't. I think that, and it stems from the written word. And I think if somebody can write a really cohesive, beautiful sentence, then, you know, you got me sold on the literature and I'll read it. And I think reading also makes you a stronger writer. And a lot of Masons out there are scared to write. You know, I get officers that don't want to submit their trustee board articles because they're insecure about their writing, but I'm like, well, this is where you got to let it all. We could help you here, you know. We could help you edit. We could make it stronger. But I think we don't want to lose that culture of having them stick their noses in books and reading, or an iPad to read a digital book, because it's an important part of history.
So we were going to do a top 10 Masonic podcast, but we knew you would have slots 1, 2, and 3. So we ruled that one out. But maybe art would be one of the mediums that comes to mind. So, ooh, you know, looking at whether it's paintings, etchings, illustration, I think that's fertile soil for continued research. I just wanted to add too on the question about literature. Why are we so focused? So for me, what's great about a book is that it can actually transport you immediately through time, space, and it puts you like squarely within the lodge or the temple of that scholar's mind, right? So you don't have to call someone up. You don't have to get on a plane. Like, there's zero like barrier of entry. And then you can kind of sit in lodge in their mind in that temple. And that becomes a very transformative experience to be able to connect with their thinking and their reflections and their philosophical frameworks and their understandings. The other thing that I think that's great about literature is that oftentimes when we sit down and we have a discussion with someone, there's like this expectation that in this dialogue, my point is going to be better than your point, and we're going to ooh touche each other, like who's going to come out on top on this dialogue. But a book gives you, even if it's something that you feel like controversial or somewhat confrontational to your own systems and frameworks of beliefs, it's non-confrontational, right? So you can actually, I think, push yourself into other areas of thought that a dialogue or maybe like a controversial piece of art, even, you know, that wouldn't allow for. So I think that's really powerful. And then the other thing I wanted to add that I had jotted down on here in my notes is that it's difficult, again, speaking from experience, it's difficult to say, take the second degree lecture and then hear that enough times and break it down and memorize it to the point where you can actually like digest and get those little nuggets of inspiration and education. It's like coaching. It's like the extended version of coaching and counseling. So I can take a book and actually access parts of the ritual that I'm struggling to understand, that I really want to understand because I really want to work on myself and grasp what's like the knowledge and the wisdom that's being conveyed, but I can't. So a book can actually help me get to that place. And so I think it's a great form of mentorship in that sense as well.
And that's, you know, it just struck a chord right now that you said that, because I think what it also does, it gives you validation. When I was a senior deacon memorizing the middle chamber lecture, I was trying to see between the lines, like, why are we saying these words and why is this allegory so important, this metaphor? Like why after 300 years are we still repeating or more a lot of this information, and why does it really matter and why should I connect to it? So I actually ended up going with Brother Marco Garcia to the Philosophical Research Center with these crazy ideas on how I was interpreting the second degree, and opened up a few books on that, broke down the second degree and go, look, here it is. What I was telling you, I wasn't crazy or far off. Somebody was thinking the very same thing 50, 60 years ago that I'm thinking as I'm reciting this lecture. So wow, like in this book is that proof that I wasn't wrong in the way I was thinking about the lecture. And it's also a shortcut when you think about literature, the top 10, number 10 book, Three Stages of Initiatic Spirituality, Approaching the Middle Chamber with Jamie Lamb. They have put, if not months, years of research into these books that in 200 pages in one or 400 in the other one, you can sit there and in a shortcut way get the same knowledge that took him years to put together into one of these books. If you want to improve your lodge, you go to Observing the Craft, right? And you read all the fails, misses, and inspirations and happiness that Andrew Hammer went through his lodge to finally come up with a formula that worked in the observant way of thinking that now you can start to implement in your lodge. So, yeah, the text is important, and I think there's a lot in here that we can always take with us and that helps us grow, connect, and become better Masons, for sure, without a doubt.
Wonderful answers. I would also just say that whenever I think about when I'm reading the text, I feel like, and it's true, you're reading the words of somebody who was truly living. Like these were their flowing thoughts. It's so intimate in a way when we think about it, and makes it that much more special. In particular with Masonic texts for me, because a lot of times these are talking about spirituality, you know, the occult sciences, or merely points of view that it's just impossible. You know, somebody who's died and gone, you can read their book and they're instantly alive again. Yeah. Now, one of my last questions here for you is, I want to know, I alluded to it earlier, you guys are doing something so crazy with the magazine. for a research lodge. Most researcher lodges, you know, we have transactions. Maybe we publish digital only. You guys are so progressive. You make these huge moves that really you see from small companies, not Masonic organizations. A research lodge that puts to shame Grand Lodge magazines. I'm not saying California Freemason magazine. I love that magazine. It's really great. But others, right? What drives this? And really, it's, I mean, sometimes people derive more value out of your magazine than they do out of their membership in their Blue Lodge. What drives this progressive nature that you guys have? Like, who was the first person to say, no, we're not just going to print it on white paper and staple it? Like, what happened?
I think it's back to that idea of the attention to details and what you would want to experience, what I would want to read, how I would want to hold this magazine and the themes and subjects and articles that I would be enamored by and connect to. And I think that's where it starts. And the more we throw it into the executive committee roundtable and discuss it, the more it churns into something that you realize others in the room connect to. Some ideas we don't and we realize why, and others we do and we realize, yeah, we're all in this together as one to create this one issue that others hopefully will connect on the same level that we connect to it. Like, we never have said, oh, this is going to be a boring issue, but you know, we'll let it go. It's always like somebody really loves it and somebody doesn't think it's boring. They might hate it, but they still see the value in it and they want to see it get out there and see what people say and think about it. So I think that's where, I don't know, the ability just to create something better and worthwhile. And again, just going from an idea to an actual physical creation and then a reaction to it, it just goes full circle from this.
So Brother Doggo is being very humble here. First of all, Brother Robert, thank you for that compliment. I think that's a very kind thing to say about our magazine and the work that we do. We're lucky to have such highly motivated Masons that have a wide range of skills, you know, everything from design to research to writing to marketing and branding. And so I think it's a collection of what we bring to the table, but we can't lose sight on the fact that we have the best master of the lodge in Brother Doggo. And Brother Doggo, I don't know if you want to share with the listeners. I don't think anyone knows yet except for me. The title that you were actually, that was just bestowed on you from California Grand Lodge.
Oh, I don't think I'm supposed to talk about that title until October.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll come back and bring
we'll
you
come
on.
Back.
But Brother Doggo, just a quick little backstory. Before I came into the lodge, they were just doing like excerpts, right? Maybe this was 5-10 years ago. Brother Doggo can correct the details there. And the first thing he did was like, one of his first mandates was we need to start releasing original content. Like, it's no longer good enough for us just to be curating other people's words. Of course, that had value. And this is what now 60 years as a research lodge, right? So we're standing on the shoulders of giants and people who have come from, from before, but Doggo has really pushed that envelope forward. He has been the visionary, and you see this in his home lodge in South Pasadena 290. You see this in the work that he's doing at the Southern California Research Lodge, and you'll see it in Masonic education in the state of California as well.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I'm really excited to hear what's going on out there. Pretty awesome stuff, I can only assume. So we come to the end of this interview, and we've talked a little bit, we've hinted around. Some listeners out there think maybe you know what's going on. Maybe you do. Maybe you've received the magazine already. Maybe you know. Maybe you've seen something. But for those of you who haven't, I'll throw it over to you guys to announce this, because I think this is just like over the top, just over the top.
Well,
drum roll, please.
Look at this.
The New Millennium Book Collection.
We put together this beautiful, well, the top 10 books, we had the author send us each copies of their books to put together in this never been done before box set where all 10 of the books are curated in this box. And you open it up, it's this beautiful detail up there, which I'm hearing rumors that we might have this decal available on the website by the end of the month, so look out for that. But with it, you get the Certificate of Authenticity sealed by the Research Lodge.
Yep.
You get the issue of the magazine, so you could reference the books. It's kind of heavy. And then you get all 10 of the books, many of these signed by the authors.
Yeah. Wow.
In the box.
You can see a Myth Magic Masonry.
Words, Craftsman.
It's like a box that never ends.
It's the box, the Cube of Light, we were originally calling it.
We wanted to call it the Cube of Light, but the dimensions were a little off.
Yeah. And you get an SCRL pin with this box. We have to definitely thank the authors for contributing and sending us their books and being part of this top 10 list, this collection. We only have 21 of these numbered box sets available. So if you're a lodge that is interested in starting a Masonic library, or if you have a Masonic library already and you would like to expand it, by all means, have your lodge purchase one of these books before one of these boxes before we sell them out. Or if you want to create your own library, for sure, you could buy it yourself. Right,
buddy?
So we have limited edition, 21. We might be raffling one off. I'm not sure. But, yes, it's a self-contained, hermetically sealed box, collector's edition box of the top 10 books of the new Masonic books of the new millennium. It is complete with gold foil on the front and the inside. It has the seal of authenticity, as well as nearly every book signed by the author, and comes with a SCRL pin. And we've been able to do this virtually at cost, right? So for the cost of these books that you might find on Amazon, plus shipping and handling, which is included in the cost, you can actually either build into your current library, start your own library, and really our goal is to help ensure that this effort can be used for the benefit of as many Masons as possible.
And you could order it through our website, theresearchlodge.com. At theresearchlodge.com, starting on Monday, September 6th. What is Labor Day? Monday, September 6th, right? I think so.
Yep.
I think that's what we pushed in the back limit. That's when it'll be the button will be there to order the box set that will include shipping, and it'll be all yours.
It is like the coolest thing.
Where else have you seen this ever happen? Not only a top 10 list, but a collection of the actual books in the top 10 list in one uniquely packaged product. I mean, unheard. I have never seen this. Have you?
Nope. Even when you go to, let's say, Grand Lodge sessions or something, you'll see McCoy's or somebody who will be there. You know, they've got books for sale, but nobody has even done something as nice as pulled a curated collection of books for you. I think what this has done, this is saying, hey, these are the most valued books that have come out since the year 2000, all living authors. Hey, they're autographed. That's cool. They're paperback. Yeah, most of them are autographed. They're paperbacks. I mean, you can put them right there in your book bag. You can put them inside your briefcase, whatever. Take them with you. But it is exactly the starter case. I can't tell you how many times guys come and they say, Robert, what can you recommend in terms of my first Masonic books? And I always tell them, I say, well, what are you going to – like – what's your exposure level? And I have to think about this and I have to say, well, I want you to start off with Freemasonry for Dummies because people laugh at it, but listen, fantastic book, classic, fantastic. It's in the top 10. And then they go, what next? And they say, well, Bob Davis, Mason's Words. And they go, why? I go, because it talks about history and the ritual and there's a little bit of philosophy in there too. It kind of bridges the gap. And they say, what about if I want to get spiritual? And then I say, okay, cool. So now I need you to go and you need to read, Meaning of Masonry by Wilmshurst. And that's not on the list. Why? Because it's not in the new millennium. But the point is, this is a great curated box set, I think, for anybody to start their first library, and add to it. It's awesome. Like, the fact that when you guys mentioned the fact that you could have this for a lodge, like the beginning for a lodge library, holy cow.
Tell us how you felt when you opened your box set. You haven't told me, like, right? Because I'm like the kind of gets a, I used to buy the hugely packaged DVD collection and I would slowly open it up to see how they like made everything fit and it was packaged and the attention to the details.
Well, you know, I'm a details guy. And I think I've told you in the past, I would buy a sheet of paper if somebody like packaged it right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You could charge me $100 for a piece of paper.
Nice.
And I think we know this as a society, and in particular, I have to say that as a borderline Gen X or millennial, I'm very much in tune with things that are made by people that I love and respect and who've put things together and taken the time. Like, I know what it takes to put together something special, right? Just like when you, at Christmas time, or gift giving, whatever your thing is, you're going to take time to put together a package, to wrap it nicely so that the opening is in its own experience. And I did. I got this box set. And, like, I had no idea. I didn't know what books were on the list yet. I opened the box, and the first thing I see is the certificate of authenticity, you know, gold foil top. I open it up. Holy cow. It's awesome, right? The box alone, this real sleek black box. It's, like, super classic. Open the box inside, authenticity. Then I get the magazine, which is this one right here. This is the one that was in the box, and I didn't even know who the number one author was yet. The next day I set it aside, but you should have seen me, right? Like I have like this leather desk pad. I'm setting everything there next to the desk pad. I'm like, okay, ooh, Chuck's book. Ooh, Observing the Craft. Oh, you know, I'm just going through and, you know, I own a couple of the books already, but what my plan to do is I'm going to take the books that I have that are duplicates, and those are going to go to my my lodge library. And, like, so cool. I mean, it was class in a box. I'll tell you that. It was awesome. And you guys, by the time this has come out, maybe you guys have already seen the Instagram video that I took when I went to unbox it. I had my wife actually film it. And it was so cool. And I have to say thanks, man. You guys are amazing. You guys really, went just over the top ridiculous with this thing.
Well, thank you for always showing us love and appreciation. We really appreciate the love you show the Fraternal Review, and it doesn't go unnoticed. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, just to echo that, thank you, Brother Robert. You've always supported us in the best light, and your contributions to Masonic education. I mean, this is the 515th or 511th episode. So this is a testament. This is just a way for us to mirror back some of the respect and admiration we have for you and your work.
Very much appreciated. I mean, as you guys had mentioned, this is a team effort, regardless if you're working for Southern California Research Lodge or you're a Masonic author out there or a podcaster, you know, doing your thing. I think all of us pooling together to bring Masonic education and bring guys, bring people into this fraternity who are focused on, you know, leaving the world a better place than we came into it through our own actions, you know, then by our families, our communities, and the world at large. And you guys are certainly pulling your weight in that respect. And you guys at the beginning of this, you kind of you gave kind of a little shout out to Brother Jeriel Smith. And I know you had mentioned he's been such a driving force behind the Southern California Research Lodge as well. And so if you guys have anything to add, but I know I would also thank Brother Jeriel Smith too.
Yeah, we love Brother Jeriel, and he was instrumental in wanting to see this issue realized, and he did. And that's a, you know, that's a testament to his curiosity and ambition with the Southern California Research Lodge and the Fraternal Review and his effort to continuously promote Masonic education.
He is no pencil whipper either. I have submitted articles to you, and I got his feedback on some of the things, and he let me know when he disagreed with something, and he was correct in his disagreements, which is just awesome to have somebody who actually pays attention, because so many times people will submit something and it just flies right through. It's awesome to know that there's people like you guys really working.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you two both for joining me in this special episode. I want to thank everybody out there listening, watching on YouTube. I think this is going to be a phenomenal issue for you to check out. I want to urge you to go to theresearchlodge.com and subscribe. I really recommend it to do the Lodge subscription. I think it's a fantastic addition. Check out what that entails. But also check out this new box set. It's really cool. And let me just pass it over to Dago and Ian for any closing thoughts or anything that you guys wanted to mention.
I thank you for having us, and I think you hit it the nail on the head. Go to theresearchlodge.com and subscribe to either the digital, the hard copy, or both issues. And starting September 6th, the new Millennium Book Collection box set will be available in its limited quantities for anybody that wants to purchase it.
Beautiful. The only thing really to add that isn't redundant at this point is just to thank and acknowledge the great authors and scholars that have made this list, who continue to do this work, as Brother Dago alluded to. I mean, there are years, if not sometimes a decade, that goes into realizing a book. So to all the authors out there, and to all the scholars, thank you again for your continued work. And just wanted to share my appreciation for that as well.
All right. Thanks so much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
All right. I want to thank Brother Dago and Brother Ian for spending the evening with me late at night, I know, in the middle of the week, to talk about the latest issue of the Southern California Research Lodge Fraternal Review. So if that interests you, again, please check out theresearchlodge.com. Check out those lodge subscriptions. But that awesome, glorious box set is just astounding. Again, if you haven't checked it out, I'll link the Instagram post and Facebook post that you can see that box set and what it really looks like up close and personal. I really just want to thank all of you for joining me on this special episode, really, of the Whence Came You podcast. Again, number 511. Thanks to our contributors, fellows, producers, our legacy partners, for all of your help in bringing this show to nearly 3 million people. It's quite an accomplishment. So, until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.